This is Dan Collymore, and you're listening to the B2 Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the B2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Laffin, and join me this week, I've got Nick Davey.
Good evening.
And Anthony Kendrick.
Good evening.
We have no Shayla here this week, but I think we found an adequate replacement in former Brighton and Celtic defender Adam Virgo. You okay?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah, so how's life been treating you since last time we spoke?
It's been a bit of a roller coaster, really. So I managed to creep onto the Football Tonight show on Channel 5 as a pundit and keeping all my BT stuff going and, you know, picking up other things along the way as well. So, can't complain, you know. I'm thoroughly enjoying the work that I'm doing and, you know, working for a good company in BT. I'm thoroughly enjoying the job that I'm now doing since I finished playing.
Yeah, and what do you think of Brighton's brilliant start to the season?
It was brilliant, you know, and you know they were getting good recognition from all managers. So I think they beat Forest on the first game of the season, then the result that I think turned people's heads that thought they could be considered as certainly playoff contenders was the away win at Ipswich. Because Ipswich were very, very strong last season and well organised, Mick McCarthy's side always are. But, you know, they got it back to 2-2 and then they found that extra goal and, you know, they went away at Leeds and got a last-minute winner and, you know, and all of a sudden you build momentum. You know, I think they beat Hull at home as well. They went away to Burnley and drew. So, you know, at that stage, the questions were always being asked of Brighton.
Yeah.
And they were answering them. I wouldn't say, I think the performances... I think after, give or take, a game, 15th or 16th game before that, the 21 record, they were kind of, I feel, not playing as well because they had that record in sight. And I think they slightly changed the way that they played to not lose games, really, and rather than to go and win them and maybe lose them, if that makes sense. But, you know, listen, each season you want an improvement from your side, and from last year, it's, you know, it really is night and day. But, they, you know, they're going for a bad period at the moment and, you know, sometimes Christmas is the worst period to have that period, you know.
Yeah.
Because of the quick succession of games and the injuries that they've picked up as well. But, you know, the signings in January are going to be very, very important. If, you know,
Each
year, the Championship will get harder and harder. You know, if you look next year, possibly you could end up having Newcastle, Aston Villa, maybe Bournemouth, or, you know, big teams, you know, that come back down, you know, it might even be the first time that all three promoters decide to stay up. So, it'll only get harder. So you sometimes have to seize the opportunity while you can.
Yeah, I think, let's say how big January is. Have you got anyone that in mind that you think Brighton should go for?
Well, it's easier to try and pick out players that are and aren't available. I certainly think a striker is needed. I think the problem with the January transfer window sometimes is when a club needs someone, you're not at the start of the season. It's sometimes, you know, give or take. You know, if you can get someone, great. If not, it's never the end of the world. But Brighton are crying out for a striker, and all the teams that will be selling players will just be adding an extra naught onto them. You know, it's that kind of. It's very, very difficult to find the right player in January. You know, last year I think they were with Darren Bent, and you know that didn't quite work out. Leon Best was another one who came and that again didn't work out. So, you know, you've got to be careful. You don't rush into buying the wrong player. But evidently, as you've seen with Derby gone out and bought Blackman, you know, they you know, proven striker this season for Reading. He's only, you know, he'll probably add 5 or 6 goals to what Derby have got towards the end of the season. So it's important they find a striker, but it's equally as important that they don't go out and buy the wrong striker.
Yeah, I do get what you said. I mean, if, I don't know if this is me being a complete dreamist, but I think they should just simply ring up QPR and say, look, what do you want for Austin? If we have to pay $10 million,
too much champ manager.
Pretty well working.
Yeah, my Twitter things and things like that, people have sort of suggested that, but if you're Charlie Austin, you know, with the Premier League beckoning, would it take a ridiculous amount of money to get him down to Brighton, and you know, and probably you're probably paying a lot of money for him with 6 months to go on his contract. But I still think the Premier League certainly beckons for him. But no, I do understand what you're saying with that. But the realistic option of that happening is very small, because Brian won't pay that at the best of times.
Well, Glenn Murray, do you reckon there's any realistic chance of him?
There you go, he's a prime example. You know, the sign is now that Bournemouth are bringing in, especially in the Graben and Phobia, especially, you know, two strikers, and then they got King up front already.
Yeah, Adam Wilson on his way back.
Exactly, yeah, and Wilson coming back. I know Muzz has scored against Birmingham in the FA Cup, but certainly somebody that, you know, I know Glenn very well, and I know that he'll jump at the chance to come back to Brighton. I don't know why, but they just seem very, very reluctant to sign him again, because they've had opportunities to sign him before, and they've just not gone ahead and done it. Whether or not that changes this time, I don't know, but for some reason, and they haven't looked into bringing him back.
Yeah, it would be the perfect solution. Obviously, I know I'm worried about a small number of idiots out there who would probably still go, oh, he's you left us for Palace when that wasn't the case.
Yeah, probably people might not recognise his name, but Dan Harding, when he went to Leeds, there's more to a story that meets the eye.
Yeah, it is.
And Brian take, you know, just as much responsibility for Muzzer leaving then Muzzer leaving himself. I know Muzzer, and I know for a fact he wanted to stay at Brighton. It's just when the Mikel Smith came in, he just wanted a little bit more money. Not a lot more money, but he just wanted a little bit more, and Poyet refused to give it to him, and Palace came in with a much bigger offer. So, you know, you're going to take it.
All right, so if we move on to Ballon d'Or, so to no one's surprise, Lionel Messi went for the fifth time. He got 41% of the votes, beating Cristiano Ronaldo and Neymar to the award. Wavy winner?
Yeah, definitely. He's definitely a winner that deserves it. Of course.
I think over the past year he has been better than Ronaldo and Neymar. Neymar's had his moment when Messi was injured, but overall, I think it's difficult to argue with Ronaldo not winning anything this year as well. I don't think it was ever going to not be Messi to win it this year.
Yeah, I agree. I couldn't really look past Messi, to be perfectly to be perfectly honest.
So you don't want to go with the claims that it's boring that Messi's won it again?
Well, it's like Michael Jordan, isn't it, in basketball? You can't not ignore people that do well. You know, I know Argentina lost in the final of the World Cup, but he still had a pretty good World Cup, and good players and great players are always judged on their World Cup form. I know Ronaldo is not in a stronger countryside than what Messi is. Mm. You know, considering that you know, they didn't win anything, Real Madrid and Barcelona won the Champions League final against Juventus, and the records that he sets, and you know, we put into context that we talk about the likes of Lampard, for instance, an English midfielder, you know, scores 20 plus goals a season. We rave about players scoring 20 goals a season in the Premier League. Mm. Messi and Ronaldo are scoring 50 plus goals a year a season. It's you know, they're scoring almost 30 more than you know, English midfielders and Premier League midfielders, and the likes of Messi, Neymar, and Suarez. The three of them are scoring more goals than the actual Premier League side. They're in the top six.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So the accolades that they get and the standard they are, and this make no bones about it, Lionel Messi is the greatest player ever to play a game of football. I think people going about George Best and Pelé and Maradona and things like that, Lionel Messi is by far the greatest footballer. The reason is because nowadays the players back in the day, you know, they weren't as fit as the players they were today. The pitches are, you know, so much better. You know, it's more pressure, you know, the expectation, the media following, everything that goes with it. He has to be considered the greatest ever player.
I think it's always hard to judge players that I never saw play. Like, I couldn't possibly say, for instance, how good Pelé was. Like, obviously, I can say off YouTube, you know, he did all this. But I think the best player, well, apart from Henri, I think was amazing back in his day. But Messi and Ronaldo are obviously the top two players that, you know, we've ever seen play. I think though, as a top three, the Ballon d'Or, it is getting a bit boring every year. They are the top three, but like, there's players like Suarez and Lewandowski's had a brilliant year. Mm. Thomas Muller, Gareth Bale. I'd like to see different names up there.
But how do you honestly knock Messi and Ronaldo out?
Well, no, I'm not saying that. It's just a shame that it is that same top three again and again, is what I'm saying.
Because I quite like last year the recognition for Manuel Neuer, because I think he's amazing goalkeeper, probably one of the best I've seen in my lifetime. And I really want him to get
last
year.
Excellent.
I think goalkeepers. Well, it's just refreshing to see a goalkeeper up there as well, and actually getting a lot of credit Neuer last year.
The problem is with the Ballon d'Or, to a certain extent, it's a voting system within the players.
Yeah.
So if you look at, say, like Kompany's votes, for instance, he's voted for De Bruyne and Hazard. Ronaldo should be picking Messi, full stop, but they don't pick it. You know what I mean? It's kind of...
Ronaldo picked all Real Madrid players and Messi picked all Barcelona players. They
won't pick each other. And, you know, even to a certain extent, when we used to do the Football League teams...
That was ridiculous, I remember that.
You know, we'll get a ballot paper come through a training and we'll get it about 9:30 from our PFA rep, and they'd be like, right, you need to do this before you go. 9 times out of 10, you pick your mates who you know in other teams.
Yeah.
And he scored Saturday, he puts him in. And sometimes you get the team of the week on the Monday paper, and you just feel there was never no real consideration of actually who's done well this season and who hasn't. And, you know, the players voting for it, me personally, it should be one striker, one midfielder, one defender, one goalkeeper. And then that should be decided, all the votes, and then you go from there, maybe. Because each year in, year out, I need to see this for confirmation, but when the last 10 years, how many have been strikers and how many have been defenders?
I think Cannavaro was the last.
Yeah, Cannavaro won it. I think Oliver Kahn won it as well.
No, Oliver Kahn didn't win it. He came in the top three, I think.
But Iniesta
won it in 2008, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you look at your Messi's and Ronaldo's and stuff, but you've got to remember that if you look into a team of Messi, if it wasn't for Iniesta and Xavi at the time, for instance, you know, they make a bigger difference in terms of the way that the team plays, you know, for him to do. For Ronaldo, if the 10 other players didn't wear their socks off around him, he wouldn't get the goals he does, you know what I mean? So it's a lot more to it. You know, more and more now, I think it's more of a media show than real recognition for the best players. I think the team of the year one sometimes can be a little bit false, because, as you said, you know, the likes of Lewandowski and Suarez and you know, players like that, again, we're mentioning strikers, you know, they just never ever get the recognition that they deserve for a wonderful season.
Agree with Phil Barnes' comments that it's more a vote for the best striker in the world at the moment?
Yeah,
it's not.
Exactly. Unless you know, the Ballon d'Or changes it. Things, you go for the best goalkeeper in the world, the best defender, and you just vote accordingly to set positions, and you just forget about the general out-and-out Ballon d'Or winner.
I do think a problem as well is each country, you get the captain and the coach, and I think some media representatives who...
Yeah, you get one from each country.
And a lot of countries, they vote for their own player. Like, for example, Wales vote Gareth Bale, I think Chile voted Arturo Vidal, and so on. They all vote their own players, which I think is a big problem, and there needs to be some... I don't know how you'd go about fixing it, maybe.
It's a difficult one, because in fairness, you can't really look past Messi. But you're right. I think when certain players are not getting recognition, that's where it's been a problem. You know, Ashley Cole, for many years, he was the best left-back in the Premier League. He never got any recognition as the best left-back in the world in terms of Ballon d'Or and, you know, being in that team of the year. It's just sometimes the perception of who you are sometimes works against you rather than just your actual talent. But, again, you know, we can beat around the bush, but, you know, Messi this year has thoroughly deserved it.
Should we quickly go on to the FIFA World 11? So it was Manuel Neuer, Daniel Alves, Ramos, Thiago Silva, Marcelo, Pogba, Iniesta, Modric, and Messi, Ronaldo, and Neymar up front. Did I miss something? Because I don't watch French football, I don't see... Is Thiago Silva really that good? He seems to always get into these teams.
I've watched French football, you know, the last couple of years. It's the seasons that Ibrahimovic has week in, year in, year out in France is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, he's by far France's best, the best player in France. It's it's like having an SPL player playing, you know, getting recognition for playing well in the SPL.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It is a little bit like that, where it's, to a certain extent, it's, you can't just turn up and not play, but the French league is, if, you know, PSG are by far ahead of any other club in that league, and you know, the likes of Thiago Silva and, you know, David Luiz, who looks actually quite good now in French league, and, you know, Di Maria going there looks a completely different player to what he was at Manchester United. It's not a tough league. You know, you want to see Thiago Silva playing in the Premier League and see how he comes up against, you know, the likes of Vardy and Harry Kane, and, you know, these type of players that are completely different from what you do get in France. Sorry, French league is very, very slow. It's, you know, I did Toulouse Marseille on Wednesday. It's the tempo of it is so slow. You know, most players play with a cigar in their mouth. It's that easy. You know what I mean?
I think the thing with Thiago Silva, though, he did move for a massive transfer fee to PSG, and generally in the Brazil team, he is very good for them. In the World Cup, like, he was so integral to that team, and when he got suspended, that completely ended their World Cup.
Yeah.
I think he gets rated a lot for that rather than what he does for PSG, but I do think he's a good centre-back, but it's hard to judge him on his performances at PSG in the French League in general.
Yeah, completely agree, yeah.
Right, so
he's still a quality 2.5. Arsenal would have him in a shot. You know, it's difficult not to discuss it, really. But playing in the French league, is he really being tested week in, week out? Probably not. But you can't, you know, doubt his talent. And, you know, being part of the Brazil team in Brazil, you know, he had a fairly decent World Cup.
There's no Premier League players in the lineup. There's been a few arguments that maybe Hazard or Terry could have.
Well, if Aguero is fit every game, then I think he could be in with a shout, but obviously then he's got to get in front of Messi, Ronaldo. But Hazard was obviously had a fantastic end of last season, but I think it's solely because of the start season Chelsea have had that they're not going to even consider Chelsea players.
But I think the problem is if your club side does
more inclined to put De Bruyne or Yaya Toure.
I mean, De Bruyne had a good season at Wolfsburg, didn't he? And then and Torre as well. I think the problem is that if your club does well in the Champions League, you tend to get in these teams more often than not. If Chelsea win the Champions League, Hazard replaces Modric, for instance. You know, it's kind of it's seen like that a little bit. But you know, in a certain extent, the way that your side plays, and you know, I don't even think FIFA football makes a big difference of who you play and who you like. It's kind of, I don't know, it's just, you know, the way it is, really. But, you know, Hazard, you know, especially for the season that he had before the start of this year, was, you know, he had an excellent season. He was by far, you know, the best Premier League player. But, you know, unfortunately, he wasn't good enough to be recognised as being in the World 11.
How's the World 11 decided? Is it the same as the Ballon?
I think it's a public vote again, where you basically write your best team out.
Yeah, I think you went on the I'm sure you went on the FIFA website.
I know there was like a 25-man shortlist or something, but I don't know.
When we've done it, you basically get a sheet of paper, and you have like, say, like 10 goalkeepers. 50, but there's no like particular right backs. You know, there's not like 5 right backs, 5 left backs. It's like 25 defenders, 25 midfielders, 25 forwards, or whatever, and then it's selected from that.
Nice. Well, if you move away from the Ballon d'Or and move on to this week's transfers, Liverpool have signed defender Stephen Corker on loan for the rest of the season from QPR.
Yeah, isn't that like a Brendan Rodgers type signing?
Yeah, he wants to go first with that one.
It's a strange one because he's always seemed like the kind of player who has potential but has never fulfilled it. It'd be interesting to see if Klopp gets the best out of him. He needs a centre-half in, and I suppose if he's there and he's available. It's strange, though, that he's not played at all for Southampton. Now he's going to possibly get games for Liverpool. It'll be... But I don't know. He does seem like a player who's got potential and could build on and kick on.
Am I the only one who thinks Liverpool literally put a bunch of centre-backs and names in the hat and they just pulled out one who can sit on the bench for a week?
He's probably the only player available from Southampton, because they like players from Southampton, don't they? I know he's on loan from QPR, but It's a difficult one because if they had signed 3 years ago when he was playing for Tottenham, I don't think anyone would be questioning this signing. I think it'd be looked at England centre-half, done well for Tottenham. He's got a £7 million move to Liverpool, just plucking a number out of the air. But the fact that he's gone to QPR, they've been relegated. He's gone to Cardiff, been relegated. And now, sorry, Cardiff, then QPR, sorry. And then, you know, he's gone to Southampton this year. And he's absolutely, he's not done very, very well. And then the game that he did play in was against Liverpool and they got tonked 6-1. I think the people are thinking about the reasoning of this, that you've got to remember now, Liverpool are not a big club anymore to what they were all these years ago. So, you know, is Stephen Caulker a signing that is at their level at the moment? I don't know. It's, you know, who would want to play for Liverpool at the moment? Because you're really not going to win the league. Technically, could you win the FA Cup possibly? And you're squeezing into Champions League football.
I think they will this year.
I think they've got. If I'm right in saying this, I think Tottenham Liverpool got a scout or a chief scout that was head of Tottenham's development or something when Stephen Caulker was at Tottenham. So whether or not he's had any influence on Jurgen Klopp just taking a punt on him, I don't know. But listen, being an ex-player myself and. You know, fans will always jump on the bandwagon, but me being a player myself, and he's walking into that dressing room, if I was playing for Liverpool, you'd think to yourself, to a certain extent, could we be signing someone better? Is he a name that excites me? Probably not. But everyone deserves a chance, you know. Everyone deserves that opportunity of being given a couple of games or see how he goes. Listen, if he goes there and he gets egg on his face, everyone's expecting this to happen, but if he goes there and does okay and just does the job to the end of the season, then people see it as a shrewd signing. So only time will tell whether or not this will work out. And as you've seen already, he didn't start the last game against Arsenal. So you know he's probably there as backup until Klopp can sign someone on a permanent deal that will suit how he wants to go.
For his own career as well, though, you could go and get. He could go and get a big move in the summer as well.
I think people just look at it that, you know, how's he got to move to Liverpool? You know, that I think that's the general scale of it after the few years that he's had. How is he playing for Liverpool now? But as I said just then, an ex player myself, I'd want to be given a chance, and that's all you ever want to do. He's been at Tottenham. He's had a little bit of a taste of playing for a relatively big side under relatively pressure. And who knows, you can just never tell really. I mean, who would have said Jamie Vardy would be the story that he is? You've got to give players an opportunity. You give them 10 games and he's absolutely having one, then of course fans can say I told you so and he was always going to be a bad signing and you know, Klopp's this and Klopp's that, but you know, until then you have to give players chances.
He's English as well, which helps.
Exactly. And that's what surprises me the most about this English media is that, you know, we're crying out for opportunities for so-called English defenders to play for so-called the big clubs. I mean, look at Gary Cahill. He went from Bolton to Chelsea. And he was brilliant. He's been brilliant for Chelsea since he's been there.
Captain England a few times.
Yeah, Champions League. The Champions League final, he was phenomenal against Bayern Munich. He was unbelievable that night. He got cramp. He was putting blocks in. A lad from Bolton, playing for Bolton, went to Chelsea, they took a chance on him. Never write off an English centre-half that's got potential talent on him.
Yeah. No, they know the leagues as well, these players. Yeah. I'm getting some foreign player coming in, doesn't the leagues that will struggle.
He's still young, he's only 24, so there's only time to tell. It's one of them positions where you tend to get better with age as well.
I think it's strange, because I think people would have expected with Klopp that he'd bring in someone from the Bundesliga rather than bringing in an English centre-half. I think, you know, people expect, you know, a former Dortmund player or something coming in. But I think, you know, I think people are just more surprised, expecting a bigger name, you know.
Does that again think Liverpool fans are just getting a bit, as Adam was saying about Liverpool not being a big club anymore, that they're not going to go and raid Dortmund because their players simply don't want to go to Liverpool?
Well, I'd say they're not a big club, but I think Klopp is probably a big influence. I would imagine on the continent, you know, players would want to go and play for him because of the manager they've brought in. Can see that really helping them sign players.
It's probably the other biggest one of the weeks. John Joe Shelby has moved to Newcastle for £12 million. Anyone a bit surprised at these moves? He had a really good start to the season. I think he's felt a favour recently, but
I think he's a really good son. I think he's a really good player. And I think
looking for Shelby and Ginger Perlow in the middle. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think he's exactly what Newcastle needs, but I think they've been crying out for a tough tackling centre midfielder, someone who can. I know they've got Teote, but he's just a loose cannon. And I think
Teote, so don't they agree to, he's going to he's somewhere in China, is he? Yeah, £8 million, I heard.
I think he's a good signing, John Joe. I always liked him at Swansea. I thought when he's played for England, he's actually done a good job.
He's 23 years old, and you know he's an England international. He's English again. You know, last season he was phenomenal for Swansea, wasn't he? He scored that. I can't remember who they scored against. He scored a quality goal that, again, he's got talent.
Quite a few, I think. Scored one this season as well, I think. Which is...
Yeah, I know he did. Yes, he did as well. You know, so I think he's 80 odd games for Swansea, and you know he's got 10 goals along the way, and still only 23. You know, it's surprising that he's fallen out of favour at Swansea, considering their predicament at the moment. You know, do people look at his attitude on and off the field? I don't know. I think that's something that, you know, can be looked at. Does he work hard enough off the field to get it right? Is it a signing that Newcastle need? Most definitely. And £12 million is a lot of money for him. I played against him when he was at Charlton, when he was like 16 years old, and back then he was still, you know, very strong, very acute. Technically a very good footballer. I can only see this being a positive signing for Newcastle.
I was talking to a Liverpool fan who was saying that the reason he didn't make it there, he had the ability, but his attitude, there was something not right about his attitude. And I think at Swansea, with him having a great start, it might be a similar thing, but I'm not sure. At first I thought, yeah, it'd be great at Newcastle, but I'm not sure. It's hard because players go there and, I don't know, like, they either seem to do really well or really badly. There's no in-between there.
Yeah, I agree with that as well.
That's Bournemouth with...
It's difficult. It could be like Kabay and end up moving for 20-something million, or, you know, become like a real top player, or he could just be like, I don't know, Florian Thauvin, who's done nothing since he joined Newcastle in the summer.
Bournemouth have bolstered the strike force with Lewis Graben and Benek. I don't know.
Benek Afobe is a very good son. I think he's done really well at Wolves.
He's been brilliant for Wolves.
He's sort of like what you joke around. You say when you sign a striker, you want him to be big, strong, quick, score goals, and he actually does tickle all the boxes to be there. Lewis Graben, I really can't understand, because he hasn't done much for Norwich. And
I think it's a big fee for Lewis Graben, £7 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a lot of money, and he hasn't really done much, to be fair, because I was actually quite happy we didn't get him, and I really don't rate him, to be honest, that much. I don't know how much
Graben paid for.
£7 million, isn't it? Maybe even
£7 million.
Yeah, he's not even, I don't know if it's me, but I've never really seen that much to sort of think of him as a £7 million striker moving to Bournemouth to sort of replace someone like Glenn Murray.
I mean, he predominantly was fantastic at Bournemouth. I think Brian tried to sign him back
in
the day.
Yeah, we did under Garcia, but he turned us down.
Yeah, so, you know, when he left Bournemouth, you know, it was a great signing for Norwich. But he's fallen out of favour at Norwich. I know he didn't play for a number of months, and I can't quite see where they plucked out this £7 million for, you know, £7 million for, you know, I can't comprehend why he's managed to galvanate that amount of money to warrant a move back to Bournemouth after the stint at Norwich has probably been very, very unsuccessful. I agree with the boys. I think Afobe is a good signing. You know, I think he's 1 in 2, isn't he, for goals, and 22 years old, and you know, he's very, very strong. You know, he leads the line well. I mean, I saw King, you know, King has got good pace, so I just don't think he's got that natural goal instinct that I think Afobe could bring to Bournemouth. And he's a signing for me, is that if Bournemouth get relegated, he is a player with Callum Wilson that will put them in a strong contention of getting them straight back into the Premier League if they do end up getting relegated.
The last one is Oslov signed midfielder Mohamed Elneny. Is that how it's pronounced? From Ball.
I know he's decent on FIFA, but beyond that, I can't say I watch much of Ball.
I've never heard of him.
He seems to be he's either backup, defensive midfielder. He's a box to box midfielder, so it's kind of the midfielder they need. It's not.
Is he going to be one of these Arsenal signers that we see play a few league games, play the Capital One Cup games, and then they get sold to another foreign club?
He's only young.
Yeah, I mean, he could be a typical Wenger signing that, you know, no one's really heard of. You know, they pay these kind of £4 or 5 million for them.
Yeah.
And they go by the wayside. And I think Wenger's got a great habit of, you know, he's got a great habit of signing some quality players, don't get me wrong, but he's got a great habit of also buying some, you know, absolute shockers. And this one is unknown to a certain extent to England fans, but you know, he has had Champion League experience as well. That defensive midfielder, they've got Coquelin, so you know they might need somebody that can, you know, that because of Ramsey and especially Wilshere's injury record, it's somebody that
Flamini's not going to be around forever.
Yeah, so you know Arteta as well. So yeah. Another midfielder is what he's going to, but again for me it's just like, you know, the £5 million signing, you know, he's not going after a Lacazette or someone like that, or you know, Higuain that would win them the league. It's just baffling how he just doesn't sort of just take that safety latch off and go for that recognised player that will do it for them, you know.
Okay, talking about strikers, I do think Giroud gets a lot of stick, and I do think he's such an underrated striker.
I do as well. I thought his performance at Liverpool was sensational.
I think that was his second goal was lovely.
Yeah, it was just fantastic. If Ronaldo and Messi did it again, the classic sentence, we'll be talking about it all week.
I saw Giroud. Funnily enough, he was a player again. You know, to a lot of fans, he's very like Marmite, and people have quite a quick opinion of him, but. I saw, funny, you know, Nick would know this, the Brighton Arsenal game, the first one in the FA Cup.
Oh yeah, I remember that first goal.
And when you see people on TV,
I never judge any goal that goes in against Kasper Rankin, and I never really
judge. No, but that was a good goal though.
It was.
and you know, a player that, you know, I watch a lot on TV and have my own opinion of him, but until you see him playing, I thought I've never seen someone so strong. Like he held up the ball brilliantly. And again, you know, kind of think, well, people kind of give him a bit of a bad reputation and want to have a dig at him, but he's a quality player. And he's led that Arsenal line on his own for a number of seasons now. He's had no support, he's had no help with him. You look at Harry Kane and Tottenham, he's got no support with him. It's difficult leading that line, the most important position in the team, week in, week out, on your own. Because he's a certain type of player, you know, he has to have the certain type of ball played into him. When it is played into him, like you saw against Arsenal, he's quality. But when Arsenal dip and they don't play as well as they can do, he suffers massively because of the way that he is. He's not like somebody that
he starts to lose interest in it.
Exactly, a little bit. And I think that's why, you know, he gets that bad reputation. But don't forget when, you know, everyone's talking about Ian Wright, he had like Dennis Bergkamp around him. You know, it's not like, you know, Henry had, you know, the likes of, you know, Wiltord with him as well, that did well for Arsenal and Pires. You know, Overmars, you know, the quality players that, you know, Arsenal don't quite have in those attacking areas week in, week out. And it's a big ask for him to do. And listen, if he didn't have scored the goals he would have done, would Arsenal be where they are? Yeah. Probably not. So he should get a lot more credit than what he's getting.
Well, they won the FA Cup last year as well, no?
I do think, going back to your point though, if Wenger were to sign a top class centre mid, like a box to box physical midfielder, that would completely make them as good as City, give them as much chance as City for the title.
I think 100%. I think Arsenal are going to win it anyway, to be honest with you.
Some breaking news today is that Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid have both been banned from registering players for two transfer windows.
Yeah, but is this one of these ones where they tell you can't sign anyone, then Barcelona end up signing Suarez?
they can sign people this.
Like 87 players or something in their transfer ban.
They registered 77 players on the 1st of January.
Yeah.
but, as a United fan, my first
players in this transfer window, so they could always try and get a load of deals done now.
That's my first thought, is David De Gea. Is it increased his chances of staying now, or will do you think they might go for him?
I think he'll go either way.
No, but if they can't sign anyone.
Yeah. Well, I guess he might go after the.
He'll stay for another season.
It'll be what? It'll be this summer and then the following January.
Yeah,
so
it's just it's one season's worth of transfers.
All right, summer 2017 potentially to go.
Yeah.
He could still go. He's signed a new 5-year contract, but I'm presuming if a big offer comes in for him, I think United will sell him.
I think they'll go for Butland or someone else.
Yeah, I think the club almost respects that he's staying, and after what's happened, and he's been brilliant for United all season, and as he always has been the last 2-3 years, he's been exceptional. I think he's been, well, I'd say second only to Neuer in terms of goalkeepers in the world. He's been exceptional, but I do think eventually he will play for Madrid. It's his dream. It's like Cristiano Ronaldo one day. He played for Madrid. I think the same thing will happen with De Gea.
Yeah, I think with David De Gea, it's just a matter of time if and when it happens. I'll be amazed if he retires not playing for Real Madrid. This transfer embargo is going to happen. They've only got Navas, I think, in goal. So, so whether or not Zidane will try and sign him before the window's over, who knows?
I couldn't see him leaving this January.
No, I can't see it either. I think the predicament that Man United are in, I think Van Gaal's under more pressure than David Cameron at the moment. You know what I mean? He really is under the microscope. And if he sold David De Gea, I wouldn't even turn up to Old Trafford the next home game. I wouldn't bother. He'd just be lynched.
Keylor Navas, though, has done well for Madrid from what I've heard this season. He's been suddenly really respected there, and he's done really well all season.
It was difficult because you've got to remember who he took over from, Iker Casillas. It's like the Schmeichel thing to a certain extent. United took so long to replace Schmeichel. Every keeper straight after him, if it was Bosnich or Barthez, were automatically compared to Schmeichel.
Van der Sar was the next one, wasn't it? Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you're 7-8 years down the line, and it was Van der Sar that finally put the stopgap in it. And do you think that Navas is coming, and if he's getting praise from Real Madrid fans, then you must be doing all right.
Yeah.
Right,
there's some reports coming out of Spain claiming that Chelsea have made a £40 million offer for Toni Kroos. Do you see any truth to this?
Probably not.
I guess with Madrid's transfer ban, I can't see them selling anyone now, but...
Yeah, this is from this morning's paper, so it's probably...
Kroos is an amazing midfielder and would do really well at Chelsea, but
I think the only way that they could change is if they offered him Fabregas, if they let him go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As a bait of whatever fee, and that they give themselves Fabregas. I don't know. So that could possibly happen, but I think it's probably more transfer paper talk than actually reality.
I don't know if Fabregas would join Madrid with his Barcelona.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, I mean that's certainly the factor of it. But who else could Fabregas ever sign for? Unless he goes over to Italy.
Yeah.
Or PSG.
But, another one was Stoke of somebody who came for Bahinho after Spurs boss Pochettino has registered that he's not sure about that he's the right player for them now because of his actions this season. Would he be good for Stoke?
Well, he probably would have been last season. he was certainly the most form shot. Well, sorry, not the most form, but he was a striker on form. You never know where the player's head at is at the moment. He's having a really tough time at West Brom. The manager seems to be liking him one week and kind of protecting him. Then the next minute, he's sort of having a go at him, saying that he's so unreliable and things like that. Would he get into the Stoke side at the moment? Probably not.
The way
that Bojan's playing, and Shaqiri.
He don't seem to be playing with an out-and-out striker. So
Arnautovic as well, yeah. So at the moment he's got Jonathan Walters there, who seems to do the job as well to a certain extent. If he went to Tottenham, he'd still be sitting on the bench. So I don't know, it'd be take a brave man to take a punt on him, especially in January.
I just get the feeling with Mourinho, like, he had a good season last season, but I think he's a bit of a flash in the pan. I can't see him ever hitting good form again. I could be wrong, he could develop into a great player, but I just get the feeling he's, you know, we've seen it, and it's just like, you know, like, a good season, and that's it.
Yeah. No, you're right, I think you're right with that. I think he's somebody that has got plenty of potential and, you know, is a good footballer, don't get me wrong, but to be reliable week in, week out, I'm not too sure on.
Yeah, you got any gossip on Chatwells?
Sam Byram, who's been at
Leeds
Everton, have had a bid of $4 million accepted for him tonight, who I think will be very good in the Premier League. The Leeds right back.
Yeah, no, he's excellent.
Yeah, I think he. Oh, they're right back though. They've got Seamus Coleman. I don't remember now. He's going to get.
Sorry, plays right. Well, right mid. Plays both right back or right mid.
Yeah, he suits Everton's style, I guess. But
he's only young as well. He's. I think he'll be a great signing for Everton, especially
for Liam BBC. I mean, he's done brilliantly for Leeds this season, and I know Leeds have been desperate to keep him. But from early on, he's. You know, Leeds is a tough club to play for. Again, the fans are,
Playing under Evans can't be very motivation. Looking at him.
Well, no, but it's just like you know, for a young lad to be playing at Leeds, to then to say early on, I'm not signing a contract, to then continue playing as well as he's done, I think shows mental strength that you know he certainly can. Play at a higher level, again, it's you know, for a change, you know, we're talking about a lot of English people this transfer window, you know,
yeah.
Walker and now Mark Byram, you know, and so you know, it's all these players that are English, which is great to see, and he's 22, and I think this will be the next step of him moving on and you know potentially pushing his way into the England side. But he's a good signing. You know, I think it's somebody that I think will play well under Martinez. I think the way that they like to play Everton will certainly suit him. The thing that's impressed me the most is he said he wants to leave Leeds, but the performance he's putting week in, week out still shows he's a quality player because he's still Leeds' best player by far.
I'm surprised there's not other clubs who've got in for him, though. I don't know. Maybe they have.
United earlier in the season. The last couple of...
Listen, going to Everton, I didn't do Leighton Baines any problem. You know, he was the next sort of up and coming left back at Wigan. Went to Everton, and he's done thoroughly well.
Yeah,
I've got some. Also, got some breaking news away from transfer window. Steve Cotter, or the Bristol City manager, has been sacked.
No surprise there. You see his video of him?
I saw a Snapchat of him.
Yeah, he's having a pop at a fan.
Did you see? Did you see the Villa fan who said back in September, "I'm not going to do it."
Oh yeah.
Said that's another tweet.
And his next one was a little bit longer than expected. Yeah. It was like almost 4 months later.
Who do you reckon? What do you think, Bruce? Just sitting. So I thought at the start of the season because they absolutely bashed League One a bit. So I thought they were going to.
They were excellent in League
it's
One.
Weird, isn't it? Because I thought they were going to do like a Brentford like last season, just like do pretty well. But I know they had a bit of a dodgy summer because no one seemed to want to join them. I think they had Blunt, Gale and Andre Gray turned them down.
It seemed to be weird. That you know they seemed to be offering $9 million and $6 million pounds for players, and they weren't wanting to join.
Probably lack of ambition.
I think Steve Cotchell is a manager that, when things are going well, he did when he came in last season. He sort of took them on to the next level and got them promoted. But I think he's a manager that can lose the dressing room very very quickly.
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
the way
yeah.
that he is with players and not his anger, but he's quite strong with the players quite quickly. And I think. From what I gather from speaking to people and knowing people, that he, you know, the player, he can lose the dressing room very, very quickly by the way that he speaks to players and the way that he is. And I mean, for a long time now, it's proven that, you know, they've just really, really struggled since they've gone into the Championship.
Yeah, no, I think who do you reckon will? They're in a scrap, isn't it? Who do you reckon can get them out of the mess? Do you reckon anyone, any names that you can think of that could be a good appointment for them?
It depends where they want to go, really. Are they going to go into the market of managers that are still in a club, or are they going to go for somebody that
done one in the lower leagues? Because you've got Justin Edinburgh's doing a great job at Ginny.
Well, he is, yeah. I mean, you look at them, you know, you look at Dean Smith at Walsall going to Brentford, Jimmy Floyd going to QPR. And Justin's done a fantastic job at Gillingham.
Gary Rowett's done a fantastic job at Birmingham. Yeah,
but I think Gary going to Bristol would probably be a step down. It's, you know, it's so difficult to, you know, I know Ian Holloway's a Bristol lad. I don't know if he would sort of go across the border to the red side to try and get them out of trouble.
He doesn't seem like a relegation scrap man, Ian Holloway.
No, he doesn't.
Meal, I think, sort of proved that. He still seems to be some like who needs to start the season or do what he did with Palace when they're flying high. But
yeah,
I think I don't know. I can't really think of any. Or maybe the one I mentioned. Or
well, who else? You know, who's out there? Nigel Pearson.
Would he gonna go there though?
I don't know. Chris Powell's just been sacked from Huddersfield.
Yeah, Powell could be a good
Canio's out there. The usual lot of Poirier. Would Poirier take the job? Uwe Rosler. Gary Monk's there as well. He's sort of like Swansea, Bristol. I don't know. There's plenty. Lee Clark's another one who's.
Isn't he the assistant? Yeah, I suppose the assistant. There is some options out there.
Maybe right? Look at someone like Paul Tisdale, Exeter for 10 years. You know, would he? Does he deserve an opportunity of managing at a higher level?
I'd love to see his. I'd love to see him at the Amex in his fancy gear. I must say.
Nigel Pearson was probably, or Steve Clarke will probably be the front runners for the job. Wouldn't you not think?
I forgot about Steve Clarke. You know, I'll just presume
Nigel Pearson's top odds once.
Oh, is he?
Bloody hell! I don't know why he would want to go there, though. I really can't.
Nigel Pearson's the favourite. Paul Tisdale, Chris Powell, Steve Clarke. After that.
Tisdale's not actually a bad shout, then.
Yeah, for the geography, is Exeter not far from Bristol?
He's been there since the beginning of time, so I think it's maybe time for him to move on. And
did he get them out of non-league?
He's been there for, I think he's been there about 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, I know he's the longest-serving manager he's done pretty well then, getting them from the conference up to League One. Then they actually didn't do too badly in their first season in League One as well.
He's been steady there, and I've met him a few times now, sort of doing the media stuff. And
he seems like a bloke.
He likes playing football. You know, his sides will get the ball down and play.
And they always seem to do very good scouting as well, because I think they grabbed the Lewis lad, Dave Wheeler, who was quality out of the non-leagues, and so they obviously do quite good scouting across the whole of the whole of the region, sort of, the whole of the southern England.
Right, well, before we go, Anthony, you did an interview this week.
I interviewed former Derby, Walsall and Birmingham youth coach Mark Meredith. He now coaches in the US, in Texas. So, yeah, he was a really interesting guy to interview. We talked about sort of age kids should be getting into football. Talked about the US and how things are there compared to the UK. He did a bit of women's football as well, women's football coach. And he was, a great guy to talk to. Yeah. Talked a bit about Birmingham and their fortunes this season as well. And he's hoping to get a playoff place. So, yeah, check out the interview. It's on the site.
Yeah, and next week you're going to be debuting a new show, hopefully.
Me and Nick Davey, we're doing a Football League show, a Football League podcast. Still working on a few details, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Okay, you looking forward to it, Nick?
Yeah, no, great. So hopefully, hopefully Channel 5 might be interested in listening out, Adam.
You'll be doing better than the people they get on at the moment.
Right, so, before we go, Adam, do you want to plug any of your social media?
Yeah, no, I'm on AdamVergs19, is my Twitter. My Twitter account, and feel free to send me anything constructive or abusive. But no, yeah, that's all I'm on at the moment is AdamVergs19 on Twitter. But no, yeah, back on Football on Five in a couple of weeks, and then you've got all the FA Cups towards the end of the month. Colchester against Tottenham or Leicester, and potentially Yeovil against Everton.
That'd be a good one for you, wouldn't it, being a former Yeovil player?
Say again?
That'd be a good one.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant, yeah. That'd be good for the club, you know, they've fallen on hard times recently, and Stack Sturrock, and, you know, it's a tough, tough ask for them, so a cup tie against Everton will certainly raise the club as they are at the moment.
Right, so don't forget to follow us at Twitter, at V2Football, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to us on YouTube. Good night.
Good night.